of the State University of New York at Stony Brook. It can be heard every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58 on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Start date January 30th. If you get up early, you can see three planets high in the sky, with a fourth due to appear in the east at the end of this week. Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars are prominent before dawn, but Venus will outshine them all. Venus will be climbing up out of the dawn this week, becoming brighter each day as it leaves the sun's glare behind. Until then, Jupiter will be the brightest object visible before dawn. Jupiter rises well after midnight, and it follows the other two planets across the sky. Saturn and Mars are fainter than Jupiter, but they're still pretty bright. And Saturn is near a star, Spica, in the constellation Virgo, which is also bright and which will help draw your attention to the planets in the pre-dawn sky. These planets are located within the solar system ruled by our sun. But Spica, near the planets, is itself a giant sun. In fact, the point of light that we call Spica is really two large stars engaged in a close orbit around one another. Both stars are much bigger and brighter than our sun, with one star in the Spica system about twice the size of the other. The separation between these stars is only about 11 million miles, as compared to a 93 million mile separation between the Earth and Sun. The two stars that are Spica whirl around one another once in only about 4 days, a very short time for such big stars. Well, that's our program. We'd like to send you some information on how you can order a sky calendar and star chart. To receive that information, write us at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas, zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Good evening. Uh-oh.
Yes, we're here.
You weren't expecting to see me, were you? Hi, Mike.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Not bad. Welcome back from Rochester.
Why, thank you. You know what I was doing?
You're not radioactive, are you?
No, I was Boeing this.
You didn't get that, did you? Radioactive? He gives me an airplane.
Here comes the takeoff.
Uh-oh. Here comes the theme. Sounds like a blizzard, Mike.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
Do most airplanes sound like blizzards?
You know, according to that sound effects record, that was only one plane taking off.
It sounded like one plane taking off. Kind of making a,
And here it is landing. Exit. It just landed.
Thank you.
Well, no, I went Boeing this week.
Did you?
Yes, I... that's one of the terms people use.
You went Boeing?
No, I went Boeing.
Oh, okay. It made a funny little sound.
No, I think that's this one here, I think, right?
How did you find Rochester?
No, that's not it.
How did you find Rochester?
Oh, it was kind of chilly up there.
Yes?
Yes. Well, actually, Saturday was pretty nice. It was in the 40s.
Wasn't in the 40s over here, I don't think, was it?
I'm not sure. I wasn't here. And snow melted up there. And
it's been very icy.
It turned bitterly cold. Oh, I don't know how my friends up there can take it.
Especially now with all sorts of interesting developments going on with their nuclear plant.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe someday we'll know what that's like.
No, I got out of there just in time. Interestingly, though, on the flight back, we went right over Three Mile Island. Because I had to come via Philadelphia, see.
Uh-huh. And was that a big event for the airplane? Did everybody point and go,
yeah. People did. The guys in front of me, in the seat, the seats in front of me, they looked down, yeah. They said, ooh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd probably say that, too.
Yeah.
And again, I've never been on an airplane before, so I don't know what I'd say.
Never in your entire life?
Never. Oh, wait a minute. Isn't it you who said you were never on a New York City subway?
No. Huh. It was me who said I was never on a New York City bus.
Oh.
I think
that's there's something more objectionable than that than not being on a plane.
Yeah.
Especially for a New Yorker.
Well, I'm not a New Yorker.
You live in New York. You're a New Yorker.
I do not live in the city of New York.
The commercials, I love New York. It's New Yorkers, okay? So you're a New Yorker. Or don't you love it?
Something like that.
We don't want to uncover non-patriotism to New York, of all things.
That's true. Hey, speaking about... Hey, is this a tune on our new turntable?
We have new turntables.
Ooh.
And they're so pretty to look at. And they smell nice, too. They smell like new... you know how
they smell like a brand new car, right?
Exactly. New things always... Except with brand new cars, they spray it so that it really smells like that.
Oh, I see.
I never could understand. But I don't think they sprayed our turntables.
Oh. Speaking about, well, this is what we're going to do this morning.
Okay.
We're going to inaugurate a new section of the program where we make fun of things.
We didn't tell the folks what program it was, did we?
Oh, we're the voice of Long Island. I'm Mike Uhas.
And I'm Eric Corley. We'll be with you for another 3 hours.
Or just under that.
So fasten your seatbelts.
Oh, because the Boeing is going to take off.
No, it's not.
Sorry. I'm dreadfully sorry about that.
We have all sorts of surprises and features that...
Let me tell you about
contributed
something.
To us.
I have a couple of things I want to make fun of. And all three of them have to do with food.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, we sent out for pizza the other night. And all these pizza places, wherever you go, except for certain chain pizza restaurants, they all use the same boxes. And there's a little motto. You've seen it. It says,
yeah.
You've tried all the rest, now try the worst.
It doesn't quite say that. I'd love it to say that.
Wouldn't it be great if it just said that?
If I ever open up a pizza place, I'll do that.
Okay.
I mean,
you're going to go out of business in a matter of a day or two.
No.
And what are you going to do with all the empty boxes?
I'll have very good business from the people with a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And that's what counts.
Like the ones that just go around with blank buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen those black buttons all over the place?
Ooh, yeah.
Something's going on.
Something is amiss.
Gary Pecorino's shrugging. He doesn't know what's going on.
Ooh.
And again, he never knows what's going on. We don't know what's going on. They don't know what's going on.
That's true.
Do you know what's going on out there?
No.
Well.
Oh, you're not talking to me.
I'm talking to those who might be listening.
Oh. No, then the next thing that happened was my little brother took me to dinner yesterday.
Ooh.
We went to one of these family-type restaurants where you can bring the kids, and they have this big, huge 9-foot projection television screen down the other end, and there's another one that you can watch. So there's two TVs in there. And here we are, we're watching the news while we're eating. And, are you there?
Yeah.
And, really interesting stuff, you know. And the things they find as news these days, they showed a guy who tripped.
A guy who tripped? Oh, you mean they're showing the ice on the street, is
that? That's right. Did you see it too?
No, but I've seen many winters where they do things like that.
But they actually, I mean, they call this news.
Well, people tripping can be news, especially if they...
They said he slid...
Trip on something expensive.
This was in Yonkers.
That knocks over something else that's expensive.
Sounds like something the tripods would do.
Yeah. The tripod effect.
Yeah. This was in Yonkers, and this guy apparently slid for 25 feet or something like that. But in any event, Stormfield was... Oh, I guess that identifies it. The weatherman was giving the news, you know, and you know how they stand up in front of the map and they have the titles of what's going to be
right.
The forecast.
Yeah.
Well, this particular one said Saturday rain develops, and they spelled develops wrong. They spelled it D-E-V-E-L-O-P-E-S.
Develops.
Devilopes. That's good. I like
that. It's like
that.
A new melon, you know?
It sounds like something that you'd eat, yeah.
Right. So
we're going to have some Devilopes. Are you going to join me?
So my brother pointed this out. We had both been watching the same thing on different screens. My brother says, look how they spell. I said, yeah, that's really funny. And the waitress...
Wait. You were watching the same thing on different screens?
Yeah. There were
different eyes, don't you? I mean,
well,
how many
he was
screens
watching,
could a restaurant have?
They have two screens.
They have two screens?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
That's true. They have one big screen and they have a small screen over the bar.
Oh.
But
weren't you two sitting together?
Yes, we were, but we were facing in opposite directions. So
that's kind of strange.
Yeah, well, in any event,
like to have seen that.
I'll have to take you there sometime, believe me. So anyway, my brother says, look how they spell develops. And the waitress, who just happened to be standing there, looked up, she smiled, and she said, they must have went to college. Oh, boy.
That's a goodie. And she wasn't kidding.
Yeah, really.
I see misspellings everywhere I go.
Really?
Everywhere. On street signs. You'd think they'd be careful with street signs, don't
like,
you?
Like Culvert Trench.
Well, Culvert Trench is actually right, but...
That's true.
Now, there was, for the longest time, in a place called Center Reach, New York, on Route 25.
Yeah?
Do you know the name of that road?
Middle Country Road?
Very good. Now, the corner of 25 and Stony Brook Road or Hawkins Avenue, whatever you call it there at that
yeah.
point, it
can uh-huh.
be both, they had a street sign right in front of, I believe you call it the Good Steer or something.
Yeah.
And... for the longest time, until they repaved the road, that sign said, not Middle Country Road, but Middle Cowdenery Road.
Yes, I remember that
one. You remember
one.
That?
I remember that one.
That stood out like a sore thumb.
It really, that area is really good for misspelled signs.
I think so.
Yeah, there's one that says Pond Path Road.
It's actually called Pond Path. And
right.
Of course,
could
it's
you,
a road.
Could you turn this down a little bit?
What, us?
No.
Oh, then.
Yeah, that's okay. good. Now, and then there was another one... It just said MCGRW. Now, there's not a single vowel in that sign.
What, McGr Street? Is that what, is that what
it was saying? Either McGr Street or McGr Avenue.
Wow.
But it reminded me of childhood days. Remember Quick Draw, McGraw, whatever. Quick Draw McGraw, was that what his name was? In any event, you knew that the street was supposed to be McGraw.
It's
but
what?
It isn't. It's McGaw. They changed it. It says McGaw.
Well, could it maybe have been a malformed A?
No.
It was actually the R?
No, it was most definitely an R.
Oh, it was an R.
They changed
it. Now, can you imagine how degrading it must be to live on a street that's misspelled?
Do you know what one of my...
I mean, that must do something psychologically to people.
Really? One of my pet peeves is seeing signs that have apostrophes where they don't belong. Like sandwiches, and there's an apostrophe in sandwiches.
Right?
Yeah, I've seen this
you
all
know,
the time. There's one in my village where you have to go over one of these speed bumps, so you slow down. It says bumps, and there's an apostrophe there. It says bump, apostrophe S. There's one in, I don't think it's still there anymore, but in Huntington, I remember seeing it going past one of the town offices
uh-huh.
that said recreation offices or something like that. But there was an apostrophe there where it didn't belong.
It's funny you should mention that. 2 weeks ago, I believe, in the Three Village Herald, a bunch of school kids got together and wrote to the paper saying that they made several horrible grammatical mistakes. And the editor, the next week, wrote this huge story saying how terribly sorry he was about it and how glad he is that you know, kids are looking at the paper. It was sort of an assignment that
uh-huh.
they had to find misprints.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was very happy and that it'll never happen again. And... he said that the Herald will, from now on, watch its step, and he spelled its, I-T apostrophe S. Now, I don't know if that was a joke or what, but if it wasn't a joke, I think it's still pretty funny.
Was it dated April 1st?
No, this was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Although I've seen some pretty good April 1st things floating around.
Oh, yeah.
But have you ever had your name misspelled?
Oh,
and
yes.
You can't do anything about it. How did they misspell your name?
We got something today in the mail. My name is spelled Y-U-H-A-S. They spelled it T-U-R-K-A-S.
What? T-U... Turkos?
Something like that, yeah.
Turkos? That is unbelievable.
I saw something of yours that you were called Evan Conley or something like that.
Oh, you wouldn't believe what they do to my name. Conley, Curly, Cole...
And Eroch, that's a good one, too.
Well, yeah. That was actually the mistake I made when I was typing this, but... We don't have to get into that, do we?
Sure. No, there was another thing I meant to tell you about. Today I went out to lunch. We went to this place. This really flipped me out. I had never been to this place that I'd gone before. It's one of these hotels that has like a restaurant concession in it. And they had this lingerie show. And the girls come up in their nightgowns and they start talking to you and stuff.
Lingerie show.
Lingerie show. Yeah.
Gary looks interested.
It was a very interesting little thing. It was really...
In fact, he's choking on his bagel right now.
Bagel? Ooh, am I hungry.
He went down to the machines and bought something.
And he didn't offer to get us anything. That's
well, he did in a way offer it, but we were talking on the microphone, so we couldn't tell him.
So this is our chance to make fun of everything. Rick, remember the time we both made fun of a picture of Ronald Reagan that made him look like a woman?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody remembers that.
That was in the... Mexico
Gary remembers it. Gary remembers it.
Really?
I bet Barry Reagan remembers it.
That's true.
In fact, we have a special feature from Barry Reagan on Ronald Reagan coming up very shortly.
Ooh.
But before we do that, I just want to stick with this business on names getting messed up.
Oh, yeah.
I have a post office box.
Yeah.
And occasionally, I get mail for somebody else with my same name.
Mm-hmm.
Which is understandable.
You were saying you got their water bill.
I got their water bill the other day, but...
But do you pay it?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, I gave that up.
Because I found they don't pay my electric bill and I drop it off at their house anymore.
I see.
But the other day, I got this this letter for this girl in Northport who had no similarity whatsoever to me.
For a girl in Northport?
A girl in Northport. Had nothing to do with my post office box. Didn't have my name. Didn't have anything to do with me, yet somehow that ended up in my post office box, and I just couldn't understand it.
Huh.
And I gave it to the person at the window and said, I don't think this is mine. And he just sort of snatched it away and said, oh, thank you.
But the post office can do things like that, too.
It's funny. It's really funny, some of the things that go
on
down there.
Did I tell you, I think I might have told you this, I was getting a letter from one village over, and you know, sometimes on the back... If it ends up in the wrong zip code for some reason, they postmark it wherever it ends up on the back.
Yeah.
Well, this one came to me via Jacksonville, Florida,
from the next town.
Yes, it did. Maybe I told you that.
Let's say you're in Port Jefferson, right?
Right. This came from Port Jeff Station.
It came from Port Jeff Station and went to Jacksonville, Florida, in between.
It certainly did. I saved the envelope.
I'd like to see that one. That's a goodie.
Yeah, I got one at work the other day. It was coming from the Chicago area via San Francisco.
Oh. Interesting. I saw a postcard today that had a strange city on it. U.S. Postal Service, New York.
Oh, that's the postmark, yeah. Yeah, they
what
do
What kind
that.
Of a postmark is I never heard of that before.
Well, what color ink was on that, blue or black?
I'm not sure. Does
because they're switching over to blue now. Yeah, true. Check it out.
They're shifting over to... Is that a big thing?
Apparently, it must be.
Wow. Well, okay, we just hit the post office pretty severely. We can't go without hitting the phone company now, can we?
Well, let's first hit Federal Express.
I've got a number for you, Mike.
Okay.
Okay? Are you ready for this one? Yeah, I'm going to dial it.
I'll dial it.
You want to dial it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, what's the number? Go ahead.
It's written in front of you.
Was that one you showed me before?
Yeah, that's the one. He's dialing the number. Are you going to bring it up at your end, or do you want me to?
I'll bring it up here.
Okay. There it is. Listen carefully to this, folks. And remember what it says. Did you mess it up, Mike?
No, I must have. Is this the local
Trust
number you're
you
talking
to do
about? Is this the local number you're talking about?
No, it's not.
Okay. Because we did that once before.
Yeah, we did that. A number that had been changed to itself. Interesting. If you look around, you uncover all sorts of fascinating facts.
Yeah, that sounds better now.
Okay.
The number you have reached, 323-9970, has been changed. The new number is... Area code 212-323-9970 in New York City. Please make a note of it.
Okay, did you hear what she said?
Yes, I did.
Well, then let's call that number.
Okay.
So always good when you make a note of these things. That way you don't have to listen the second time they say it. So we're going to call up that number now and just see where it leads. Phone company said that we should do that. We have a connection.
The number you have reached, 323-9970, is not in service. In area code 212. Please check the number and dial again.
I don't suppose you want to check with the other one and dial again, do you?
No.
We'll be doing that all night long.
No. But that's interesting.
I think so.
That's very interesting.
I think that's funny.
Yeah. Certainly is. These things you can uncover.
And there are many more where that came from. There's something, if you want to talk about misspellings and funny things going on, you can't, get that jet out of here, you can't leave out the Stony Brook campus. You just can't.
No?
No. Well, you know, of course, about the stickers that they put on every light switch.
Oh, yes.
You want to describe those for
us? What is it? It says, closed door before leaving?
Well, it's a big Stony Brook conservation thing. Now, I'm not bad-mouthing anything about this place. I think it's a great place, but you have to point out the flubs. You just have to. You can't ignore them. And there are flubs here, and there are some dandies. I have to tell you, there are some really good ones. And this is one of their, energy-saving methods, where they planted these stickers near every light switch, and do you remember what they say, Mike?
Yeah, they say turn off lights, you know, shut windows, and close door before leaving.
That's right.
And they had a lot of people end up in the infirmary with swollen noses.
Before leaving the room, close the door.
Really?
Now, there are millions of those. Anyone who comes on campus will see them, but not too many people notice that. It sort of goes by a lot of people. It went by me for the longest time until a friend of mine pointed it out. They have a new one that just came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, on campus... On campus, you can dial on-campus numbers using only five digits, the last five digits of the phone number.
Right.
However, next to all the emergency telephones that they have right now on campus, they put these new signs, these new heavy, I guess they're almost metal signs.
Is that the ones that say, please watch your step?
No, those are new ones, too. That's because of the slippery ice, which we'll get into later. But these are numbers that say, in emergency, dial 3333, which is supposed to be the public safety number. However,
however,
you won't get anything if you dial that number. You have to put a 6 in front of it on campus.
Yeah.
So that's not only funny, it's also kind of dangerous and stupid, actually.
Yes, I just thought I'd
put that out, but the tradition continues. You know, for a couple of years before they rebuilt one of the intersections, there was a big stop sign, and right next to it, no more than a foot away, with a little sign underneath it that said, no stopping, bus stop.
That's great.
I should have sent that one into National Lampoon.
That would have been printed, I'm sure. There's a couple of signs, traffic signs on the campus that I'm not convinced are in the best of positions. Like there's an exit sign. It's shaped in the
like a one-way sign.
Like a one-way sign. And it's about 100 feet from the nearest exit. You'd expect that to be right up on top of the exit. But oh no, it's... If somebody turned where it said exit, they'd end up in a sump, I think.
How about a speed limit sign about 3 feet away from a stop sign? Now, what's that supposed to do?
Well, that happens.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to make sense, though.
And then there's another one that says, it shows a divided roadway, you know, that you usually see it right in the median,
yeah,
right where the median starts.
Uh-huh.
So you notice to keep left of it, or keep right of it, actually. And no, this one's off on the side. You'd end up on the road on a curb if you followed that.
I've seen people end up on curbs
because of that sign.
I don't know if it's because of the sign, but I've seen people driving around up in the grass, and I don't think they wanted to do that.
Yeah,
but it tends to happen. Well, speaking of crazy things,
this is
more or less a news item because it's something that's going to be occurring here on campus on Monday. Now, as you know, classes begin again here at the State University of Stony Brook,
ooh,
Monday, February 1st. And a bulletin was issued today as far as something that's going to be happening because of all the snow and ice that's been around.
Mm-hmm.
And parking lots haven't exactly been totally cleared out yet. And thousands of students are going to be returning Monday. So, what's going to be happening is, first of all, the parking garage adjacent to the administration building will be open for free parking to all faculty and staff members arriving through noon on Monday. And, of course, spaces will be reserved throughout the day for vehicles who have already paid. Now, commuter student parking will be limited to the South P lot and along North Loop Road. In other words, commuters are going to be expected to park along the road that leads from Table Quad to North P lot, which is
very... Now, how are all these commuting students going to find this out?
Hopefully by listening now, because they're not going to get this bulletin until they get on campus, and by that time it's going to be too late.
Yeah,
now,
I'll say.
There's also going to be a one-way traffic pattern starting at the main entrance along the North Loop Road.
A one-way traffic pattern.
That's right. And
wow.
Commuter students who enter the campus from the south entrance on Nichols Road or from the Stony Brook Road entrance will be directed to the south P lot, and they won't be allowed any further. The north entrance will be closed, period. Totally closed.
Now, why is this?
Well, I know there's a big hill in that north entrance, and
yeah,
when the ice was there, a lot of cars just slid right down it into the intersection.
Ooh.
I don't know if they're anticipating that. Only cars with faculty, staff, or garage stickers will be permitted to enter the center campus area, and campus buses will make special frequent stops at about 500-yard intervals along the section of North Loop Road where commuter cars are parked.
Hmm.
And a tow truck will be patrolling the campus throughout the day to provide free assistance to anyone whose car becomes stuck due to the ice or snow conditions. So we just thought we'd pass that along to you in case you're thinking of coming here on Monday. It's going to be a pretty interesting scene.
It's going to be a zoo. That's what it's going to be.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
It's going to be a real circus.
A real circus.
A real circus.
A Monday morning circus.
Yes, certainly is.
Who's on the air Monday morning? Sharon Vernile?
Yeah.
Oh.
We've been babbling on here for the better part of 25 minutes.
What would you like to get into? We have two things.
How about if we get into... Do you want to get into the Australian thing?
The Australian Almanac?
Yeah.
Well, we have this program that was sent to us through the courtesy of the Australian Information Service. It's complied and edited by Terry...
Compiled.
It says complied here. It says complied.
Let's make fun of it.
Oh, boy. Maybe it is complied by.
Or complied with.
Well, he's an Australian broadcaster anyway. I don't know who typed this. But the first thing on the tape is music.
Why don't we just get into it?
Waltzing Matilda. Well, you're going to hear Ron Danielson, curator of the Performing Arts Museum of Melbourne, talking about the new exhibit to honor Dame Nellie Melba.
And a whole bunch of other stuff, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Welcome to Australian Almanac. I'm Terry Hughes, and this edition has a decidedly natural air. Birds, kangaroos, and wildflowers, but with a twist. First off, there's a study of the dwarf kangaroo. Then an atlas of Australian birds, some Australian wildflowers headed for America, another exotic Australian export, Dame Nellie Melba, the renowned opera singer, and also a twist on nature, artificially bred abalone. I'll explain that one later. First, let's hear about Dame Nellie Melba. Dame Nellie was one of the world's outstanding prima donnas at the start of the century. She came from Melbourne and will be the subject of an exhibition to launch Melbourne's new elaborate performing arts museum. The exhibition, entitled They Call Me Melba, will display a vast collection of memorabilia surrounding the opera star. Items range from family souvenirs to pieces associated with her appearances in the opera houses of the world. Graham Edwards is talking with the curator of the museum, Ron Danielson.
We are very anxious to concentrate on her contribution to the scene here in Victoria, the development of her artistry within her own home state. She actually took the name of Melbourne, the city in which she was born, and our attempt is to make sure that this generation in particular understands the importance of her place in the development of music in Australia, as there has been considerable documentation over the years of her work overseas. But a consideration of her work here in Australia has never been fully documented.
And this exhibition is going to have some interesting memorabilia, I believe.
Yes, we've been very fortunate through Dame Nellie Melba's family, her descendants, to have received many of her own personal items, but particularly stage memorabilia items, which she used in her performances over a long period of time. Dame Nellie, of course, lived just outside Melbourne, in a beautiful home, Coombe Cottage, and many of those items were retained and looked after in her home after she died in the early 1930s. And those are the items which the family have passed over to us for safekeeping, for restoration, conservation, and now, of course, in the future, exhibition.
Can you single out some of the unusual items?
Well, the one of which we are particularly proud is the Lohengrin cape, which was first used in performance in the early 1890s, which she wore when she sang the role of Elsa in Lohengrin. She virtually gave up wearing that when she discovered, or she decided, that Wagner was not appropriate for her voice, so that it went into storage after that time, and it's almost in perfect condition.
What have you got in the way of music? It was fairly early in the days of sound recording.
Yes, we have a wide collection of her early recordings. She, of course, was very important to the development of the recording industry, because in agreeing to have her voice recorded, she virtually gave respectability to that industry. She used it very effectively indeed, and she had her own particular label. It was Moog, actually coinciding with the opening of this particular exhibition. RCA are reissuing all of the American recordings that were recorded on Victor.
You mentioned the great help of her family in supplying articles. Have you also been going overseas for other items?
We've had contact overseas. For example, we have very close contact with the Covent Garden Archives.
Drinking all our beer, 'cause in heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we are gone from here, all our friends will be drinking all our beer. Oh, take it now. There is no smoke. That's why we better have another go. 'Cause someday when we croak, all our friends will be smoking all our smoke. 'Cause in heaven there is no beer. That's why we drink it here. And when we are gone from here, we'll be drinking all our beer.
the dome, you have no fear. Just come and get your cheer.
A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata, Dunkin' Mata in a tear of two. Dunkin' Mata in a tear of two. Shaolin monk in a shine black boot. Shaolin monk in a shine black boot. They must be go and salute. They must be go and salute. A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata. The chest that you deliver, the chest that you deliver. Cause if it did, you make your wrinkle. Sometimes it's just up in a burger. Sometimes it's just up in a burger. Say what? A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata. Blood, Bruce Lee, lay down in a cemetery. Chick, chick, chili, give my feet to your belly. Chick, cut a wang, it's a bump in a bum bum. A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata.
Go, we are a jolly good fellow. Go, we are a jolly good fellow. You ain't got a thing to drink up a tank.
A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata. They let him make him tampa. They let him make him tampa. You check Papa Sai, say him really not dead. Check Papa Sai, say him really not dead. Him throw the drum key to your chest. Check Papa Rabbi, cause him be a snort. What's it? Check Papa Rabbi, cause him be a snort. What's it? A Dunkin' Mata, a Dunkin' Mata.
And now to nature. Conservationists and bird lovers have worked on bird atlases in Europe and Britain, adding considerably to the knowledge of the makeup and distribution of bird populations. And now a similar atlas is being prepared in Australia. The wide migratory spans of many Australian birds, together with the large area of the country and small population, create many problems. But as the director of the operation, Margaret Blakers, pointed out to Graham Edwards, the Atlas had the widespread support of ornithologists and amateur bird watchers from universities to the most remote homesteads of the Australian outback.
We're collecting information on the distribution and breeding distribution of birds throughout the whole of Australia using a grid system to divide the country up into about 820 or 830 grid blocks.
I suppose one of your problems is the wide area in Australia and also the fact that some of these areas are fairly sparsely populated.
Yes, that's a big problem. About 2,500 people right around Australia have contributed information. Obviously the best information comes from where people actually live, and to get to all the other areas where the deserts and so on, we've had to mount expeditions of different sorts, and people have gone off their own bat to go to some of these areas as well. Most of them are non-professionals. In fact, most of the people were not even associated with bird groups. Some of them just collect the information around their back gardens in their homes and so on, and if their back gardens happen to be in the middle of the Northern Territory or somewhere like that, then that's extremely valuable and extremely interesting. For some of the other areas, we've had to mount big expeditions to get to them. We've had one large expedition across the Great Sandy Desert, which was an area that hadn't been traversed since the first explorer went that way in the 1890s.
What about out to sea?
Out to sea, we've had people who have managed to hitchhike on boats, navy boats and so on, and collect information. We've got people living in lighthouses who've been collecting information. And then in a number of areas, there are regular seabirding trips which are organised, so we've taken the information from those as well.
Any school children?
Yes, because the project's been going for 5 years, which is a long time in the life of a school child. We've had kids who've joined at the age of 10 or 11 and dropped out a few years later, and I met one of them and he said, golly, that was something I used to do when I was young.
And in all this time, have any new birds or unknown birds been identified?
Not directly by the atlas. In fact, one new species has been identified. The younger man-eater on the Queensland coast has been identified during the 5 years that the atlas has been running, but not directly as a consequence of the atlas.
Wow.
Get me out of here.
Oh, my God.
12:39 in the morning.
Oh, that's...
good stuff from Australia.
That's about all we're going to hear of it for tonight, I think.
What were we listening to? The editor of the... editor of the Australian Atlas of Birds?
Something like that, right?
Let me see if I can find any more misspellings in this little sheet here. I'm good at that. I love finding misspellings. I think it's really wild.
Yeah.
So far, nothing.
No, let's see. Let's tell the folks what we're going to have coming up. We've got something from Bunkin Spunky. We've got the
Isn't
tripod.
Tasmania spelled with a Z?
No, not always. Not always.
They spelled development right, by the way.
Oh, really? They didn't spell double oops.
But for some reason, though, they capitalize kangaroo everywhere they go. They do.
Well, they
look at it.
Hey, you know, for the waltzing Matilda.
I guess so.
So
they put an accent after the zip code.
Ooh,
for some reason.
Well, maybe that's a
New York, New York 10163 accent mark.
Maybe it's a quote, half a quote or something.
Could be, but it was never opened.
Hmm. Anyway, let's see. What else do we have? We have the tripod family coming up. We got,
yes.
Let's see. That's an interesting episode,
a couple
I'm sure.
of special guests. And,
right. We also have an album side coming up at about 2 o'clock. And,
it's going to be a goodie.
Let's tell them who it is. Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks, side one from the LP, Striking It Rich. Good tunes on there.
You want to tell us something about that kind of music and that particular artist?
No. He has an LP called Last Train to Hicksville. Last Train to Hicksville.
Hicksville?
Hicksville, yeah. Yeah, apparently
Hicksville, New York?
Well, apparently he didn't know about that. Or maybe he did, and, well, in any event, he has another LP by that name.
Interesting.
But anyway, I think the most important thing we can do right now is give our listeners our telephone number.
Good idea.
It's area code
516. Number?
246-7901.
Actually, if we say area code 516, we really should say exchange 246 extension 7901.
Okay, let's try it. Area code 516.
Screwed it up already. No, that was right.
Yes, let's start again.
Okay, sorry.
Area code 516.
Exchange 246.
Extension 7901. You can dial that directly from any phone in the world.
I don't think anybody got through to anybody because, well, it's just too confusing.
It didn't get through to me, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, now we have something from Barry Reagan, our news director.
Ooh.
41-gun salute. Now, we have, remember the State of the Nation address?
Oh, yeah.
State of the Union?
Yeah.
That's what they call it, I'm sorry. State of the Union address.
Well, what is this? The State of the Empire address.
Something like that. Barry Reagan took a Ronald Reagan speech, and what could we say?
Well, you're hearing here first and only on the Voice of Long Island.
He redid it.
Yeah.
He redid it, and well, here it is in its somewhat entirety. Somewhere. It's coming. There it is.
This is an official presentation of the Ministry of Truth. Our glorious leader. Addressing the gathered dignitaries of the Empire.
Years ago, my first State of the Union address to you is a matter of historic record. When I visited this chamber, I proposed a new spirit of partnership between this Congress and this administration. It will encourage more government spending and less private investment, slow economic growth, reduce production, and destroy future jobs, making it more difficult for those without jobs to find them, and more likely that those who now have jobs could lose them. together. After 50 years of taking power away from the hands of the people in their states and local communities, the record is clear. And I believe that history will remember this as an era of American renewal, remember this administration as an administration of change, and remember this Congress as a Congress of destiny. Together, we've begun to restore that margin of military safety that ensures peace. Our country's uniform is being worn once again with pride. Together, we have made a new beginning, but we have only begun. And so, the question, if the fundamentals are in place, what now? Well, two things. First, we must understand what's happening at the moment to the economy. Our current problems are not the product of the recovery program that's only just now getting underway, as some would have you believe. Second, because our economic problems are deeply rooted and will not respond to quick political fixes, we must stick to our carefully integrated plan for recovery. And that plan is based on four common sense fundamentals. This administration has and will turn its back on America's elderly and America's poor. Under the new budget, virtually every American who shops in a local supermarket will deprive the elderly, the needy, and the helpless. This will make the federal government more pervasive, more intrusive, more unmanageable, more ineffective, and costly with a single bold stroke. One as real and deadly serious as any in America today. The military dictatorship that has attempted to crush human rights in the Caribbean and elsewhere, we will act with balance. Our foreign policy must be rooted in realism, not naivete or self-delusion. A recognition of what the empire is about is the starting point. Walls or minefields or barbed wire to keep our people in. Martial law to keep our people from voting for the kind of government they want. The rule of law under God.
This has been an official presentation of the Ministry of Truth. Our glorious leader's State of the Empire Address. The Ministry of Truth, serving the Empire since 1984. Yeah.
looking for a sign. I'm looking for the children that I knew in 65. The world is savage, yeah. Oh,
1954. Welcome to Society Today, the program that takes a hard-hitting look at the shape of the world in which we live, who's responsible, and what went wrong. Tonight in our studios, we'll be speaking with Arthur Goldberg from Flushing, New York.
Good evening.
Thank you for being with us tonight. Now, how long have you been living in the New York metropolitan area?
Ooh, I'd say it's been a good 35 years now.
So you spent the vast majority of your life existing in the Big Apple.
I sure have, and I must admit it's changed quite a bit over the years.
For the better or worse?
Oh, for the better. At least for me, that is. You see, I'm a freelance photographer, and since the 40s, technology has improved so tremendously with regard to cameras and things.
Mm, that is true, and cameras have become an integral part of nearly everyone's lives in our society. The thriving magazine industry is living proof.
Yes, that's right, that's right. So are newspapers, motion pictures, television.
On this program, though, we like to focus on the negative aspects a little, and I'm sure that if we look hard enough, we can find some small detail of modern-day photography that isn't exactly upbeat in tempo.
Well, you're probably right on that, but I'm so busy taking my pictures and enjoying myself, I don't really have the time to think of anything bad or awful about that particular field.
Well, what kind of pictures do you deal with mostly?
Well, I spend the majority of my time working with dirty pictures.
Dirty pictures? That's what you work with?
Well, yes. Actually, I've been trying to develop my works into a rather new art form.
You have?
You see, I used to be what was considered a conventional artist. I'd take regular pictures of ducks and trees and ponds and things, but it just got so horribly dull after a while.
Yeah.
I knew if I didn't do something new and different, I would surely go crazy with boredom.
So you started working with dirty pictures?
That's absolutely right. I felt kind of funny doing it at first. Nobody really seemed to take dirty pictures seriously. As a true art form, that is. But over the past 5 or so years, I found American audiences to be much more open-minded about such things.
I'm certainly glad we started talking about this. You've made it much easier to approach the entire photography field from a negative perspective.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, I'm sure that even you, Mr. Goldberg, despite the time you spend engrossed in your work, must on occasion hear some rather critical things regarding the type of work you do.
Dirty pictures?
Yes.
I imagine there are some critics, but I don't know of very many of them.
But,
I mean, if I were to go out tomorrow and invent a totally new style of shoelace, I'm sure I'd receive some sort of criticism. People get criticized for anything, don't they? I'm afraid I don't know what you're getting at.
Well, Mr. Goldberg, how can I phrase this? There are many people in our society who would consider the work that you do to be very harmful to the morals of, for example, our children.
Children? Well, I'd be amazed if even one child in this world has ever looked at my works. Now, why the devil would my pictures be considered immoral?
Well, Mr. Goldberg, surely you're not saying that children don't look at dirty pictures now
and then. That's exactly what I'm saying. Children don't look at them. And neither do most adults, which is why our society is in such a mess. No one is willing to go out and experiment with something new.
Oh, come on. Dirty pictures have been around for ages. You haven't invented anything new, and you know it. And I honestly can't understand why you're actually coming onto this program and suggesting that little kids look at pornography. If there's anything wrong with today's society, it's people like you who push their warped views onto mainstream Americans.
Now, hold on one minute. I don't understand why you're attacking me like this.
I know all about your kind and the smut you turn out.
Smut?
And then you actually have the nerve to go and call it art.
It is art, damn it. Huh, what the hell do you know? I'm an artist. You're a bloody talk show host. Who are you to judge me without even seeing any of my works? Why don't you let your audience decide? Huh? I'll bet they show more taste than you do.
We can't show our studio audience dirty pictures. Let's come over you. All right. The program has made history before. I guess we can do it again. But as soon as they see the kind of trash you're pushing on decent-minded people, they'll be just as turned off as I am.
All right. Now, this first work is called Study in Red. It's one of the first pictures, the first dirty pictures I've ever done. Now, as you can see, it's really just a skyline. Trenton, New Jersey, actually.
You see that?
In the development process, however, I poured 3/4 of an ounce of tomato ketchup all over the slide. I mixed it in such a way that the skyline now looks just like a scene from the planet Mars.
That's a dirty picture?
Now, this next one is a bit more complicated. Using a small dab of blueberry jam mixed with some grass stains and a few pieces of organic compost, this picture of a world's fair was totally altered.
Where'd you find this guy anyway?
Over here, I went through an entire can of no-frills soda before I got the effect on it.
WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 12:58 and 0 degrees outside.
That's 32 Fahrenheit.
That's correct.
And this is the voice of Long Island.
You're Mike Juhas.
And you claim to be Eric Corley.
I do, and I continue to.
And together we'll put you all to sleep, both of you out there.
Yes, we will do that.
Both of us will put both of you to sleep.
And you'll go out and put more people to sleep. And then it will be morning. And we'll start afresh.
And then we'll wake you up again.
We will. Tripods are coming up. And so is all sorts of other things.
Like Bunky and Spunky.
Yeah.
And their predictions for 1982.
Political power shift.
A little closer to home now, the economy will either change or stay the same. President Reagan and other famous people will continue to make headlines. Some well-known people might die, while new faces will become popular.
Speaking of popularity, some of your favorite rock groups will have hit albums. A few of the new TV series will be smash hits, while others will fade into oblivion. Cable TV will be offering lots of stuff it didn't have before, while continuing to show the more familiar programs that we all know and love. And many network guys will change jobs.
Now on the science and medicine stuff, me and Spunky predict that the public will find out lots of things they didn't know before. And here are some horoscope predictions.
Libras will eat lots of food this year, while Capricorns will generally get at least 8 hours of sleep a night. Geminis will visit the bathroom every day, and Pisces will see their relatives more than once. Aquarians will get some new clothes, and our old pals, Sagittarians, will grow older.
So this is Funky and Spunky reminding you, it's all here and it's all true.
Midnight on the water, Sunday on the lake, a beaver or an otter steals across the moonlit waves. Foolish moth undaunted by the screen upon the door, bumps his head instead of leaving, comes on back for more. Choruses and crickets sound, the car across the way, the dark of night and the covers down, fond memories of the day. Potted plants, the dance of sweet fern, shuffled by the breeze, the shadow of a bat swing in the shelter of the trees. Northern lights that flicker with their chairs upon the lawn, coolness of late summer and the still before the dawn, with smoke from the campfire drifting slowly to the sky, the shimmer of a school of white perch, the spark of fireflies. Thank you. Good night on the water, sand and cedar air. A quiet place to suntan face and summer in your hair. And boats and floats and wild oats growing sweet beside the spring. Good night on the water, and the owl is on the way. As I roved out of a bright May morning, calm and clear was the weather, well, a chance to roam some miles from home among the beautiful blooming heather and a feather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather, and a chance to roam some miles from home among the beautiful blooming heather and a feather on the moor. As I roved along with my hunting song and my heart as light as any feather, I met a pretty maid upon the way. She was tripping the dew down from the heather and the heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. And I met a pretty maid upon the way. She was tripping the dew down from the heather and the heather on the moor. Where are you going to, my pretty fair maid? For hill or dale, come tell me whether I'd modestly she answered me to the feeding of these lambs together in the heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. I'd modestly she answered me to the feeding of these lambs together in the heather on the moor. Well, we both shook hands and down we sat, for it's been the finest day in summer. And we sat till the red setting beams as the sun came a-sparking down among the heather and the feather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. And we sat till the red setting beams as the sun came a-sparking down among the heather and the feather on the moor. She says they must go away from the sheep and lambs that stray from under. But I am an old to part from you, and those fond lambs are to part from mother and his heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. And I am an old to part from you, and those fond lambs are to part from mother and his heather on the moor. She rose and away she rose, and her face and name I know not either. But if I was king, I'd make her queen, the last I met among the heather and the heather on the moor, over the heather, over the moor and among the heather. And if I was king, I'd make her queen, the last I met among the heather and the heather on the moor.
Well, I went up on the hill about 12 o'clock. I reached back and I got me a pole. I went to the harbor, I got me a line. I'm heading on down to the fishing hole. I bitch a good fishing all of the time. Well, I'm a good fishing too. Now I beg your line, if your sweet wife is gonna catch more fish than you. Well, no fish bite without good bait. Now here's a little tip that I would like to relay. Any fish bite has got good bait. Well, I'm a going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too. Went up on the hill, it's 1 o'clock. I spied a little catfish swimming around. I'm getting hungry, I don't know what to do. I gotta get me a catfish soon. I bitch fooling fishing all of the time. Well, I'm a fooling fishing too. Now I bitch on life, your sweet wife is gonna catch more fish than you. Can't no fish bite without good bait. So here's a little something I am anxious to relate. Can a fish bite without good bait? Well, I'm a going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing. My baby's going fishing too.
Speaking tonight with Roland Jeffries from Wheeling, West Virginia. Mr. Jeffries holds a doctorate in philosophical biology and is currently employed by the government over there as a technical specialist.
Yes.
And that's what we asked him to come up and talk about with us tonight. Mr. Jeffries, welcome to the Voice of Long Island.
Thank you. And thanks for that little introduction, Mike. I had no idea I was so important.
Well, what we asked you up here about in the first place is the division, the governmental division which you're in charge of.
Right.
It's called the Department of Imperfection.
That's correct.
Could you go into what that's all about?
Oh, I certainly, Mike. I've been with the Department of Imperfection now for just over 4 years, since its inception. And I started as a mail clerk and worked my way right up to the top. The mayor of Wheeling once said that, in fact, he never saw anyone move up so fast in any division.
I guess you're just what they're what they'd consider a natural for the job, huh?
Well, that's what they tell me. I'm pleased as punch about it.
What exactly is the Department of Imperfection? What does it do?
Oh, well, actually, Mike, we're a kind of a public service organization.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're dedicated to the entire human race.
Well, that's rather ambitious.
Oh, yeah, I think so. What we basically do is spread our philosophy throughout the land, and that philosophy being that nobody's perfect.
So that's your philosophy?
Well, others have said that before, but they usually just let it sit. Now we go out and we prove it to the people.
And just...
You probably want to know how we do that.
Well, yes.
Okay, I'll tell you. A good part of a typical day over at the Department of Imperfection consists of nothing more than reaching out to the public and re-educating them on the idea of perfection. Now, we do this by proving to them that mankind was never meant to be perfect.
I see.
Just look around you, you know?
You're kind of going against a prevailing mood in this country, which virtually demands total perfection in everything we do, from schoolwork to careers to even our love lives.
Everything. Perfection today seems to be a goal for nearly everyone, but not for us.
Oh?
Now, for us, imperfection is the goal. We strive for it.
In what way?
Well, we mail letters to our constituents urging them to send us money for our cause, and they're loaded with spelling errors and factual misinformation. Sometimes the paper is too short and it's ripped in half. once we sent out an envelope that had no address on it whatsoever, it didn't come back either, which is proof of more imperfection in the postal system.
Is this intentional?
Oh, of course. Actually, to tell you the truth, we do come up with a few of our own mistakes, which, since they're mistakes, we don't catch them. But we're quite proud of them nonetheless, and we know that they're there. The people love it, of course.
They get back to you, do they?
Oh, yeah. Everyone can identify with inefficiency, cloddishness, incompetence, foolishness.
Cloddishness, that's a word I haven't heard in a long time.
Oh, no? Oh, I think you're going to be hearing that word a lot in the 1980s. I think that's going to be a major part of the next decade. Cloddishness, imbecility, asinineness.
Mm-hmm. That's another one.
I don't even think that's a word. But then, I don't know everything. That's why I'm a human. I'm imperfect, too.
Well, that's good. I see.
Oh, see, a lot of people, when you tell them they're imperfect, they're not...
They take it as an insult.
Exactly. They take it as an insult, and that's totally the wrong attitude to have. Human beings are not meant to be perfect. If you want to be perfect, you should be a computer or something.
Well, computers are far from perfect.
No.
You need a human to program one.
That's right. And that's
I don't
why
know much about computers, but I know that.
Computers are perfect, but the people who program the computers are the ones who always foul things up, and I say God bless them. Because once the perfection takes over, what is there left? What is there left? I ask you, Mike.
There's not much.
That's right. And that's a kind of an imperfect answer, I must say.
Why?
That's only a part of it. We present petitions to people, and then we forget our pens, okay, or our clipboards. But did you ever try to sign a petition without a clipboard, Mike?
Yes, I have. I often use somebody's back.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, preferably a male, because generally females, the bra strap gets in the way.
So we'd have to have people signing it on the supermarket window or even on a grocery cart, and then they're liable to puncture the petition when they do that.
When you sign something on a supermarket window, and I've signed things on a wall before, if you're using a ballpoint pen, it runs out of ink.
Well, that's true.
Because the way you tilt it, you know, and the ink runs down instead of towards the point.
Now, people have said that it is possible to make a pen that would not run out of ink at any angle, but I'm totally against something like that, because that would be just one more step towards perfection.
Mm.
And we don't need that as humans.
That's your point.
If we live in a perfect world, it'll be a boring world. There won't be any chance for... There won't be any wars, any arguments, any potholes in the street.
Well,
we need these things.
They
would keep us alive. Imperfection is our blood. You understand?
You're talking like this is a global issue. How are you being received in other cities and, in fact, other parts of the world?
Well, quite well, Mike. I'm very impressed and optimistic by what I've seen. It's kind of hard to monitor, though, since we're quite inefficient. We don't keep accurate records. We lose things a tremendous amount of the time, and our telephone connections are simply abominable. But,
that reminds me. Do you break things a lot too?
Oh yes, oh yes. Our ashtrays. We have little china ashtrays that we put on our tables in the office.
Are they red?
Some of them are. That's funny. Now that you mention that, I never even thought about that. But yes, we're always knocking the things to the ground. One person did do it intentionally. It's no good to be intentionally imperfect. I don't think he's not working for us anymore, because if you're intentionally imperfect, You work at it too hard, and it's obviously fake. But if you want to be imperfect from the heart,
do you have?
You're either born with it or you're not.
Do you have garbage can fires from time to time?
We had one the other day, and we couldn't figure out how to use the fire extinguisher.
Did you pull the pin?
We pulled the pin. In fact, we snapped the top right off the thing. And then we just threw it into the fire, thinking that might do something. But actually, it exploded. It
exploded, yeah.
So,
around here known as the tripod family that is so incompetent. They're always breaking things.
Is that so? What,
in fact,
did they
live in
fact,
they had to go to France or something to replace the statue of Charles de Gaulle or something.
Is that so? That sounds interesting. Do they live around here?
East Setauket, actually.
Hmm.
They're originally from Big Bear City in California, though.
I've heard of Big Bear City. I don't know when. No, I forget. But then again, that's because I'm imperfect. I forget things a lot.
Uh-huh.
Where was I, anyway?
Hmm.
But anyway, I'm very optimistic by the things I've seen in other countries and other cities, other parts of the country. Just last week, for instance, we contacted the Motor Vehicle Department in Albany, New York.
Mm.
You've heard of that?
Yeah. I've had quite a few dealings with them.
Well, we were hung up on 14 times in one afternoon, Mike.
I don't know if that's any record.
Well, that kind of imperfection doesn't come easily, I must say. You have to work at it. You have to. And I've been finding, Mike, more and more cases where people seem to be really trying to get together and be as imperfect as they can together. And I think that's admirable. When people can show that kind of spirit and get together and just be as totally incompetent and foolish and silly and cloddish, it's really something. It makes you think back to your ancestors, to the caveman era, and you feel sort of a brotherhood.
Huh.
And it makes me proud to be a human, and an American, too.
Huh.
And a native West Virginian.
From Wheeling.
Correct.
Mr. Roland Jeffries.
Good night.
Jean-Luc Ponty. It's from his new LP. What's the name of the album? Mystical Adventures. Herc, you there?
Yes, I am.
And I guess we might as well just kind of run over the things we played just before before that little thing. There, we started.
Watch it.
Oh. Right.
You have to open that again.
Right after Bunky and Spunky, we heard from David Mallet in his 1979 LP. Pennsylvania Sunrise, a song called Midnight on the Water.
Yeah.
And from a new LP from The Gathering, or it's called The Gathering, with Paul Brady, Peter Brown, Andy Irvine, Donald Lunny, Matt Malloy, and Tommy Potts. We heard a couple.
Oh, there goes again.
We heard Heather on the Moon from Honest Tom Pompasello, Fish and Blues. All here on USB. Where it's 1:34 in the morning.
That's the time I'm opening this. Stay open.
Okay.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Sorry, I'm trying to put the studio back together again.
Yeah.
Things are going kind of crazy around here. Oh, let it stay closed. Okay, I don't care.
Okay, well, it doesn't really matter much.
Well, the air kind of tends to stink up in here when the door's closed.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, why don't you, like, open a window then?
I'd like to.
Oh. Well, then why don't you?
Well, let's build a window first.
Let's read the USB Long Island weather.
Sounds good to me.
Mostly clear tonight, low around 30. Partly cloudy and mild tomorrow, high in the 40s. Chance of a few showers early tomorrow night, lows in the 30s. Winds becoming south to southeast, less than 10 miles per hour overnight. Southwest, 10 to 20 miles per hour tomorrow. Chance of precipitation increasing to 70% when rain develops tomorrow evening.
Oh.
Now, look for Sunday, mostly cloudy with rain likely developing in the afternoon, high around 40.
This is January.
Yeah.
Rain in January?
Hey.
That is so depressing.
Yes, it really is. Say, I'm surprised you didn't say anything about the microphone stand in here.
Oh, we have a new microphone stand.
Yeah.
In there. That's right, we do.
Yeah, and so now you're saying it now.
It's a good microphone stand. I like it.
It really is. It doesn't... You can... Well, it makes a little noise.
Yes, but we don't usually move it around as we're talking.
That's true.
With the old one, it moved itself sometimes.
That's true.
Right onto the floor.
Yes, right. Even our station manager wasn't spared from having the microphone drop on him. He was
telling
me one time he was reading the news, and he was, you know, standing, you know, sitting... erected his chair, and all of a sudden the microphone just dropped, and he just, like, kind of dropped with it. And nobody was the wiser.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen when we're reading the news tonight.
That's true. We got news coming up in 19 minutes.
19 minutes.
And it's going to be on time tonight.
It will be.
We hope.
It will be. It definitely will be.
We hope.
We have the Tripod Family coming up.
Ooh.
Very soon, right after this next track. What do you think of all that stuff about imperfection? Do you think that's... There's any logic to that?
I'm not too sure.
The gentleman had a few interesting points, I thought.
I'll say so. He sounded remarkably a lot like a guy I used to do a radio program with.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Some guy named Corley or something like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, in any event, why not get into, like... Yeah. Why not get into a cut from David Friesen, from his LP Storyteller, and one of the tripods coming up real shortly on The Voice of Long Island, where the telephone number is area code 516, then 246-7901.
With the Three Village Tobacco Farms proudly presents the episodes of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Last week, Pop found out for the first time that possibly the bullet that entered Charlie was meant for him. And as we join him this week, he's still down at the precinct and apparently not getting answers to the questions at hand.
All right. Yeah, now that we've gotten all that straightened out.
Wait a minute. I'll just wait one confounded minute. I don't plan on waiting around for some madman to come and shoot me. I've got other plans, you know.
Oh, well, Mr. Tripod, do you want to catch these perpetrators or don't you?
Oh, of course I do. But there's got to be another way to do it, Inspector.
Well, what would you suggest?
Well, I don't know. You're the cop. How did you check for fingerprints? Or footprints? Shotgun shells? Getaway cars?
No, I'm afraid we didn't get around to everything. Things have been very hectic around here, you know.
Excuse me, Inspector.
What is it, Watkins?
Your phone. It won't stop ringing.
Well, answer it, damn it.
I tried, sir, but that doesn't work. It keeps right on ringing.
Excuse me, Mr. Tripod. Watkins, I'm a busy man. Now is not the time to tell me you don't know how to answer a telephone.
With all due respect, sir, I understand how to use the phone. It's just that I've never encountered anything like this before.
Watkins, for crying out loud. Oh, bang my foot on the table. Look, step aside. I'll show you how it works.
Inspector, can we get back to me?
In a minute, Mr. Tripod, in a minute. Now, first I have to teach this chucklehead how to answer the stupid phone.
Inspector, I'm trying to tell you, I already know how to answer.
Now watch, Watkins. I'm going to go over this once and only once. This thing is a receiver. Let's pick it up like I'm doing now and talk into it. Hello, headquarters. Well, what the hell's wrong with this thing? Hello, headquarters. Why does the stupid phone keep ringing?
I tried to tell you, Inspector.
Why didn't anybody tell me anything sooner? This is a very serious matter, Watkins. Call up the phone company and demand an explanation. Hurry up!
Right away, sir.
Muzzy, I want you to get on top of the building and disconnect all the phone lines here before this menace starts spreading.
Okay, Chief.
And while he's doing that, Callahan, you call up everyone within 50 miles and find out if this same thing's happening anywhere else. Let's get a move on!
Inspector, cut it all. Well, you get back to me.
I'm sorry, Mr. Tripod. We have these little emergencies now and then. Now, where were we on you?
Oh,
You see, somebody's probably out gunning for me at this very time.
Oh, yes, so they are. So they are. You want a cigarette?
No, I don't smoke.
All right. Now, I get the impression that you don't want to wait until the perpetrator catches up to you for us to nab him.
Oh, that's exactly it, Inspector. I'd rather catch him before he puts me into the amalgamated hospital, along with Charlie. Why should we wait? There must be a few clues that we can work with.
Well, you might be right on that, Mr. Tripod. But that's going to involve quite a bit of work, and I don't... Would somebody turn that thing off?
Oh, for the love of Pete, that's your job. You're supposed to be finding clues.
Yes, well, I'm afraid we can't guarantee anything, Mr. Tripod. I mean, we have a limited staff, and they're all busy doing important things. It took us 3 years just to get this wall painted. And now the state wants to put wallpaper over it.
But you're a police inspector. Don't you have more important...
Like I said, we'll do our very best. And I... Excuse me. There. So much for that. Now, we'll see what we can do, Mr. Tripod.
Oh, all right. I guess that's the best I can expect anyway. And before I go, I have one last question.
What's that?
This isn't asking for too much. Could I have an armed guard to protect me from possible harm?
I'm afraid we're all out of armed guards. But I do have something else that might help.
Well, what's that?
Toby the Wonder Dog.
And so Pop Tripod's future is still uncertain. Are unknown assassins trying to get him? You want to tune in next time when we'll hear Pop say...
That's the strangest looking dog I've ever seen.
That's next week on The Exciting Adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
To all the boys and girls that are now listening to this LP, but should be instead watching TV, cause if they're caught listening to this LP, they'll be flogged by their mommy. And when we say, show me say, who was Adam and Eve? Show me say, who was Adam and Eve? They were the first sex teachers, I believe. They were the first sex teachers, I believe. Come me say Adam cocky long and did that touch a in my toe. But if a pussy fat and did that hang out a door. Can Adam say to you to bend your back and touch your toe. Then go behind Eve and around the cho-cho. Can Eve all out like that. Adam say I quite call this one the best shot. Show me say who was Adam and Eve. They were the first sex teachers I believe. Come me say Adam cocky long, it was a teaser. Come me say Eve pussy fat, it was a blazer. Come me say Adam cocky long and did a rub him knees. Cause Eve pussy fat, you say I'm a virgin, please. Who was Adam and Eve? They were the first sex teachers, I believe. Cause they were living in the Garden of Eden. I said they never know nothing about breeding. Come me say Adam put Eve to lay down in the grass. Eve lie down and I wind up her ass. Then do it every night, no fuss, no fight. Then wiggle, then jiggle, then pull tighter. Then we chant together, no matter about the weather. When Eve say she love it, Adam him a fuck it. Then bring forth Cain, then bring forth Abel. And now you are played by your turntable. So who was Adam and Eve? They were the first sex teachers, I believe. Adam pushing him cock like a sticker than the mic. And when you fire off, it just like starlight. So who was Adam and Eve? Come and say, who was Adam and Eve? They were the first sex teachers, I believe.
Cause Adam make a joke, if say fi take time, no man. Adam make a joke, if say fi take time, no man. He make another joke, and she a go like Indian.
Me chief crazy ass, me go and do our part.
Hanya, 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 ooh, hanya, hanya. So me say, ooh, what Adam man is. Cause when Adam was a baby, I'm still in nine crib. Cause Eve did a make out a two Adam rib. Cause Adam was a boy, and Eve was a girl. The only two human being in the world. Adam never used panther, Eve never used pearl. So who was Adam and Eve? That was the first age teachers, I believe. Adam take a bite and be far with the fruit. The next thing you know, him have a thief cocky root. His son cannot keep out of the truth. So, cause when he said him cock me, say she out to salute. So who was Adam?
Well, classes are about to start again, so you kids will all be piling back into Stage 12 in the other swell dorms. So we're here to talk about dorm safety.
That's right. You can never be too careful. Now, we hear a lot of complaints about dorm sanitation, and that can be a big problem. But cockroaches are gold protein, and we advise you not to waste them. We know several big cafeterias that wouldn't dream of it.
Now, we've been hearing that some of you kids out there are taking drugs. We find this hard to believe, but if your roomie should be caught taking pot, call the Coast Guard immediately. He'll thank you for it later.
Keep those dangerous chemicals in the lab where you can get expert supervision. Spunky lost a dear friend when he blew himself and his entire suite up with a solution that turned into blasting caps.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. So party with safety, because lots of things can happen. For instance, don't go to sleep when the carpet's on fire. And never clean your tobacco-stained teeth with hydrochloric acid.
Speaking of hall parties, you'll probably have lots of yummy leftovers. A good way to avoid salmonella is to refrigerate them, but try to finish them within a day or so. Spunky lost a dear friend when he was eaten by a monster that grew on some radioactive turnip salad. So until next time, this is Spunky.
And Spunky reminding you that the most important safety issue is... Don't play with blasting caps!
Yeah.
That's Dr. John.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's from the new LP, Dr. John Plays Mac Rebinac.
That he does.
A song called Pine Top. And we heard the tripods just before that.
We certainly did, and what a mess. Yeah, what a mess things are getting into over there.
Something from Bunky and Spunky, actually, as well. All sorts of things happening here on your non-commercial radio dial. Yes, the voice of
Long Island.
Well, it's 155 minus 1 degree Celsius. That's about 30 degrees Fahrenheit.
And here's a look at the latest news.
Today is Saturday, January 30th, the 30th day of 1982. There are 335 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history, on January 30th, 1933, Adolf Hitler was named Chancellor of Germany, also on this date. In 1882, Franklin D. Roosevelt was born in Hyde Park, New York. In 1948, Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated by a Hindu in New Delhi, India. And a year ago, New York City gave a ticker tape parade to the American hostages released 10 days earlier after 13 months in the hands of Iranian militants. Today's birthdays, Pulitzer Prize winning author Barbara Tuchman is 70 years old. Gene Hackman, the actor, is 52, and actress Vanessa Redgrave is 45.
In today's news, congressional Democrats are accusing President Reagan of misleading the public on El Salvador. The president has signed a certification which says the Salvadoran government is making a concerted and significant effort to protect human rights. That certification clears the way for U.S. military and economic aid to the U.S.-backed Salvadoran government. But New York Democrat Stephen Solars says Reagan's portrayal of conditions in El Salvador bears little resemblance to reality. There have been unconfirmed reports that Salvadoran troops massacred hundreds of unarmed civilians during a recent offensive against leftist guerrillas. Reagan's chief economic advisor says top administration officials are in regular contact with the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, but Murray Weidenbaum reminded the Republican National Committee Friday the Fed is an independent body. Weidenbaum's comments follow a call by Senate Majority Leader Howard Baker for the White House and the Reserve Board to synchronize their efforts. The administration has grown increasingly critical of the Fed's tight money policies. The Republican National Committee isn't as tight-fisted about its own money. Members of the GOP approved a $34.8 million budget for the National Committee this election year, the largest annual budget in the party's history. The Democratic National Committee's budget is $8.5 million this year.
The investigation continues into last week's accident at Boston's Logan International Airport, in which a World Airways DC-10 skidded off a runway into Boston Harbor. Federal investigators say the pilot was relying on runway conditions reports up to 2 hours old when the accident occurred. There's speculation that ice had made the runway slippery. Ice was also on the minds of at least 10 pilots the day Air Florida Flight 90 crashed after takeoff from Washington's National Airport, killing 78. Tapes between the airport tower and the planes show the pilots informed the tower they were returning to have their planes de-iced. Brigadier General James Dozier faces a week of questions from United States and Italian authorities about his 42 days as a prisoner of the Red Brigades. Dozier, who was rescued Thursday, is staying at a military hospital in Vicenza in northern Italy with his wife and daughter. President Reagan is urging two Soviet women inside the U.S. Embassy in Moscow to give up their hunger strike before it is too late. The women, a mother and a daughter who have been fasting for a month, want permission from Soviet authorities to leave for the United States. The Chicago office of the environmental group Greenpeace is taking responsibility for a mock attack on a nuclear power station Wednesday. Aerial flares were fired on the Zion installation north of Chicago. The group says it wanted to show the vulnerability of nuclear power plants to terrorist attack. The demonstration has been disavowed by the national headquarters of Greenpeace, which says the Chicago chapter would probably be expelled.
Uh-huh. Well, New York State sued the Hooker Chemicals and Plastics Corporation for $200 million yesterday, and Attorney General Robert Abrams says his office will go after other industrial polluters of the Niagara River. The suit claims that the company has knowingly allowed its Niagara Falls plant to pollute the river for years. In addition to the suits for damages to the environment and for punitive damages, the company faces daily $10,000 fines for violations of the state environmental conservation laws. And Rochester Gas and Electric spokesman says the company will wait for the temperature in its shutdown steam generator to drop before sending technicians into the damaged unit. The company plans to send in technicians to investigate the cause of Monday morning's nuclear accident at the Ontario plant. RG&E officials had hoped to enter the massive generator today or tomorrow. Company spokesman Richard Sullivan says that it would be possible to reduce the temperature, now estimated at about 150 degrees, by running water through the system, but that the water would become contaminated with radioactivity. The accident is believed to have been caused by the rupture of a steam tube in the generator. And, in what state officials claim is the largest installation of its kind in the nation, a private firm has been hired to install and maintain 6,000 telephones at the state's huge office complex in Albany. The cost-cutting move announced yesterday will take a big chunk of business from New York Telephone Company. NYT currently owns most of the state's 100,000 telephones. State Budget Director Mark Lawton says NYT will have to bid competitively with other firms now to keep the state's huge business. The office campus project is one of three contracts already approved, which could save New York $1.7 million in the coming fiscal year.
Nassau County police say 8 families were evacuated yesterday afternoon when a gas main cracked in North Massapequa. Police say there were no injuries. The gas leak at Summit Road and North Richmond Avenue in North Massapequa was reported to the Long Island Lighting Company about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, police say. And the 8 families were evacuated by the North Massapequa Fire Department as a precautionary measure. Local repair crews are expected to remain on the scene most of the night, police say, and gas has been cut off to 30 homes. Taking a look at the USB/Voice of Long Island weather, mostly clear tonight, low around 30 degrees Fahrenheit, partly cloudy and mild tomorrow, highs in the 40s, chance of a few showers early tomorrow night, lows in the 30s. And if you're a hang glider or a surfer or a sailor, you'd be interested in the winds. South to southeast, less than 10 miles per hour overnight. Southwest, 10 to 20 miles per hour tomorrow. And the chance of precipitation increasing to 70% tomorrow evening. And it's about 2 minutes past the hour of 2, and it's minus 1 Celsius in Stony Brook. It's about 30 Fahrenheit. And you are tuned to WUSB Stony Brook. And it comes, it's 2:02 now. That's Washington, right?
Something like that.
So it's time for our album side. And this week the album is by Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks. It's an LP called Striking It Rich. We're going to hear side one. The cut's called You Gotta Believe, Walking One and Only, O'Reilly at the Bar, Moody Richard, Flight of the Fly, I Scare Myself in a Silly Rag. How's that sound to you, Eric?
Sounds interesting. When did this album come out?
This album was released... Well, it's, of course it doesn't say. It was probably... It was, hang on.
Got you there, didn't it?
It certainly did. 1977.
77. Now, what kind of a history does this person have? Because I'm not very familiar with him.
Well, he has a couple albums out.
How would you describe the type of music we're about to hear?
Well, some folks would probably consider it swang.
Swang?
Swang. Well, you see, there's guys playing steel guitars, and they got a big bass, a fiddle there, a mandolin, and of course you got some backup vocals and some cha-chas, and some really interesting stuff. Ooh, that's what I'll say.
Sounds like we're just about ready to get into it.
Sounds good to me. You're on the Voice of Long Island, where the telephone number is
246-7901.
Motherland.
And it's a losing,
though he looks alone.
Somebody,
I want them on the phone.
Cause we're doing what you want and only, and you know that means I'm fine. If you don't love me, then you follow me alive. You take your heroes and you put them up beside. It's no contrast after watching on the rise and rise.
About the rat that you are, whoever you are, you push me too far. Now I'm gonna smash your face. O'Reilly, it was plain, was feeling no pain. I think you better reckon with me. The life at the bar was taking a charge. O'Reilly was as drunk as can be. Whoever you are, you push me too far.
Time for smash old things.
Those drunk men laugh so loud. O'Reilly was beating the crowd. The fight was on the bar. O'Reilly was winning. O'Reilly was singing. Says I'm gonna smash your face. O'Reilly was smashing his face.
Turmoil, the fun had begun. O'Reilly was the principal cheer. And just a big cut, some drunk came by and laid his hands around his chin. You've stolen my beer, and then he ran. You kept yourself in the bag. Whoever you are, you pushed me too far. Now I'm gonna smash your face.
myself just thinking about you. I scare myself when I'm without you. I scare myself the moment that you're gone. I scare myself when I let my thoughts run. And when they're running, I keep thinking of you. When they're running, what can I do? To scare myself, and I don't mean lightly. To scare myself, it can get frightening. To scare myself, to think what I could do. To scare myself, it's some kind of voodoo. And with that voodoo, I keep thinking of you. With that voodoo, what can I do? So different from what it is. And I'm also so much calmer. I feel better. For the stars are crossed out forever. And the sooner that you realize it, the better. I'll be with you. I won't scare myself down. What to do, and I won't scare myself. And I'll be with you, and I won't scare myself. And my thoughts will run, and I won't scare myself.
And there you have it. That's our classical, our melodramatic album side for this evening. Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks. Here at side one of Striking It Rich. Songs You Gotta Believe, Walking One and Only, O'Reilly at the Bar, Moody Richard, Flight of the Fly, I Scare Myself, and Philly Rag. And you're tuned to 90.1 FM, we're WUSB in Stony Brook, New York, where the temperature is about -1 degree Celsius, roughly 30 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm Mike Uhas. Eric Corley stepped out for food. He'll be back in a little while, we hope. Who knows, he may even be listening at this very time. What did you do while that album was on? I'll tell you what I did. I swept. I vacuumed and I swept. Did you ever sweep a rug? That's what I did. I swept a rug here. I broke the broom, too. Because the vacuum cleaner, it's not working up to expectations. And I found that I could do a better job by sweeping all the sand. You know, it's this winter, you know, weather stuff. Now, Eric's going to come back with the food, and he's going to track sand in all over the place after I clean the place up so nicely. And, well, Kirk's here. He'll be up in about 35 minutes or so. And in the meantime, we're going to be spinning discs for you in a rub-a-dub style. All sorts of funny, fun things are going to be occurring. If you desire to get in touch with us here to voice your opinions, pro, con, undecided, sure, we'd love to hear undecided people. The telephone number is 246-7901, and the area code is 516 because we are on Long Island in the county of Suffolk. This next thing is from Cornell Campbell. It's on the Joe Gibbs label on 90.1 FM.
find your boxes over there. Your boxes all over the place, baby. I said your boxes over here, and your boxes over there. Your boxes all over the place, baby. Your boxes over here, and your boxes over there. Your boxes all over the place. I tell you, baby, your boxes over here, and your boxes over there. Because you follow your silly friend's advice, baby. I tell you, your boxes over here, and your boxes over there. Cause you follow your foolish friend's advice, baby, baby. Your boxes over here, I see that your boxes over there. Because you follow your foolish friend's advice, baby, baby. Your boxes over here, and your boxes over there. Your boxes all over the place.
Oh, Thank you.
No more dub. Well, it's...
No.
it's 2:55 in the morning, and somebody wanted to hear some more traditional stuff.
Oh.
Well, that was really nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, wasn't it good?
I thought so.
This is from... from an LP called The Apple in Winter, Irish Music in New York, Brian Conway, Tony DeMarco on fiddles, and Cesar Pacifici on guitar and bones. It's pretty interesting, though, that this fellow, Tony DeMarco, is most definitely an Italian name, and he actually looks quite Italian.
Uh-huh.
But he's doing Irish music.
Certainly sounds that way.
Yeah. And dub, of course.
Of course.
So, Eric Crowley, you went out and you got the food?
Yes, Mike Uhas, I did that.
And
it's all here now.
I have some barbecue-flavored potato chips and some macaroni and some of that soft drink that we won't mention on the air.
Yeah, well, I hope you're enjoying all that.
Well, I will be, I'm sure.
And I hope you enjoy your week.
And I hope you enjoy yours, too. Now, you'll be back Tuesday, will you?
I'll be back Tuesday night. You'll be back Thursday night, as
usual. If all goes well, yeah.
I think so. And mm-hmm. We'll both be back next Friday.
On the voice
of
Long Island, the program that steps
on the foot
of authority.
Ouch! Says authority.
What was that detective's name in the Tripod family today? Boy, he was a klutz. He really belongs in the Tripod family.
Oh, you mean the way he hit his foot on the desk when he stood up?
Yeah.
That must have hurt. Done that a few times.
Oh, boy. It sounded like a 2x3 or 2x4 being banged into a cabinet or something.
2 weeks ago, I hit my head on a table as I was standing up. I was underneath the table, of course. That's the only way you can do that.
What were you doing under there?
Well,
did you ever... This is
picking up something else that I had dropped.
When I... a few years ago, one of my favorite things to do was like go to a fast food restaurant and drop a penny or something on the floor and bend over and pick it up, and on the way up,
thank you,
hit the counter with my hand to make it look like I was hitting my head on the bottom of the counter. That was always fun.
And what would you do after that? Just look.
I'd go, ooh! Make it look official, you know.
And what would people do?
Well. Oftentimes, oh, sir, are you okay? Can we give you a free milkshake? No, that never.
You
want to
try that somewhere?
Yeah, we're going
to
have
the weekend. Let's go down somewhere. And I don't know if it would work. It would be fun anyway.
Yeah.
Well, two people can't do it at the same time.
That's true, but one can be watching. The other one could be paging Howard Tripod.
Yeah, well, we won't mention that anymore, but hey, folks, if you're in a department store or something, can't hurt to page Howard Tripod. He just might answer.
Howard Tripod, please call the customer information desk. Oh, that's our theme song. Mike Uhas here, goodbye.
Eric Crowley here, goodbye. Kirk's up next. See you next week.
On WUSB, Stony Brook.
Out of bed, at 8 a.m. Out my head, by 10:30. Out with mates, and dates and friends. That's what I do at weekends. I can't talk, and I can't walk. But I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to watch my money go. At the local, no. When my feet go through the door, I know what my right arm is for. Buy a drink and pull a chair up to the edge of the dance floor. Dancers bouncing through the night, trying to stop or start a fight. I sit and watch the flashing lights, moving legs in footless tights. I go out on Friday night and I go home on Saturday morning. I go out on Friday night and I go home on Saturday morning. I like to be